ॐ सहनावतु सहनावभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Let's just do it. I'll talk about the text later. But we'll just start. Just a very thorough chapter of Ishwara oriented. It's very complete, beautiful chapter using the theater, the lamp of the theater, the light of the theater as a metaphor. But you'll see as we go through it, it's some beautiful verses by Vidyaranya. So repeat after me for verse one. Paramatma Dvayananda, Paramatma Dvayananda, Purnath Purvam Swamayaya,
Purnath Purvam Swamayaya,
Swayameva Jagad Bhutva,
Swayameva Jagad Bhutva,
Pravishan Jiva Rupataha, Sandhi. Paramatma, Paramatma, Advaya, Ananda, Purnaha. So Paramatma, Paramatma, Advaya, Ananda, Purnaha, Purvam, Swamayaya, Swayameva, Jagat, Bhutva, Pravishat, Jiva, Rupataha. Purvam. Purvam means before. Here, it means before the creation. Before the creation came into manifestations, Purvam. The Parama Atma, means the Atma, the conscious being which is yourself. I like to say, to just be able to always focus on where that lands, if I say yourself. Myself, is that a big S self, or what do we mean by self? It's your own presence, this me, the ever-present me, is just when I say me or I'm talking about fundamentally or upon analysis, I'm really talking about this, the me that is aware of every experience that I have. It has a subject-object relationship with every thought, with every mood, with every emotion, with the body, with the world. All experiences come into my awareness, right? And they leave. Every experience, whether it be an internal experience or an external experience, every experience that I have comes into me, into the awareful being, which is myself, and it leaves. Therefore, it is not me, right? If it wasn't there before and it's not there after, that's not going to be me. I'm going to be the one who is there present to all experience as experiences come and go. That includes all of your thoughts, all of your moods, all of your emotions, all of your perceptions. Any and every experience that can be objectified belongs to what we call Maya, not to myself. So now when we say the Parama Atma, what do they mean? Atma means yourself. The conscious Atma, the self, just the self. When we say Parama Atma, we're talking about the true nature of yourself, which is Parama. Parama really means this little phrase that Swamiji uses all the time, Desha Kala Vastu Aparichedaha. That which is aparichedaha, that Atma, yourself, this me, which is aparichedaha, it is not circumscribed, not limited by space, desha, by time, it's not limited by time or space, or by any namarupa, by any name and form, vastu. any name and form that exists within the creation internally in my own mind, my own inner experience, or externally, right, is what we call nama rupa. It has a name and it has a form. It can be, any experience can be differentiated from another experience. So this is really important, actually, because if I just say name and form, and then you just think, okay, well, this has a name, you know, it's a little, whatever it is, what's this name for this thing?
Stool.
A little stool. Okay, thank you. It's a little stool. So this form has the name stool, okay? But then we don't think about space or emotions or, you know, really as nama rupa. But nama rupa has to do with an experience that can be differentiated from another experience. You know, a vritti, a thought modification that can be differentiated from another thought modification. Because actually all the experiences that we have are in the form of a thought modification, even emotions, right? It's something that is internal. Even all of your external perceptions are not external. The object is external, but the experience is internal in my mind. And so all experiences actually are subject to limitation. They're paricheta. Paricheta means they can be differentiated, they can be limited by another experience. And so desha, kala, time and space, and vastu means namarupa, aparichedaha. So the self, the atma, yourself, is actually parama. It is desha, kala, vastu, aparichedaha. It enjoys no limitation whatsoever. There is no time, there is no place, there is no situation where it is not. So that means in the totality of all experience for all beings, for the creation itself, the underlying, we can say underlying is not the best word, the non-dual, changeless presence of myself is the invariable reality in every experience that I have. And not only that I have, but all beings have, all living beings have, all animals have, all worms have, all mosquitoes have, all creatures have, all devatas have, and the Lord has, Ishwara has, the invariable, we say non-dual experience, because it's invariable and it's not objectifiable. Invariable means it never changes. Yourself never changes. It's never touched by any experience that you have. That's why we were saying in the contemplation, just let the thoughts be. Notice. Don't worry about them. Don't worry about the emotions. Just notice that they're not touching you. It's not as though these emotions or experiences that we have that come into being and go out of being kind of change me while they're there. They actually do not in any way. And so also when we're like, this becomes very present, noticeable when we're doing a contemplation, that even those, these thoughts are passing through or feelings are passing through, they're not a disturbance at all unless you let them disturb you. They're not a disturbance. So letting them be, just let your buddhi, your intellect, your buddhi, just gently, just turn to your own presence. And you can notice that nothing's happening to you at all. Not at all. And that's invariably true. There is not a time now, and there will never be a time in the future where anything can touch your being, because your being is not an object within time and space to interact with other objects. You are ever present in the most changeless, the most, that's what I say, very strong. Because you can withstand the whole universe, the entire universe, Ishwara. Swamiji used to joke. You can even, Ishwara. Ishwara can't even touch you in any way, because the self is also Ishwara's self. And so nothing can happen. And so why worry? Why, even in meditation, I mean, why worry? Just let them be. It's all Bhagavan. Yourself is invariably present in every experience that you have. And so in this experience, we are used to having the names and forms, the moods, the emotions to be kind of totally superimposed upon you. That viveka, that differentiation between the experiences that you're having and your own presence is not clear. One of the most important things that takes place as you're gaining this knowledge is that you're discriminating between your own presence, that conscious being, and the experiences, the moods and the emotions. All of a sudden there's some room between you and the experiences. And that's a huge thing. Until there's that room is there, that viveka is there, it's not there. It's not there. And so, in fact, my being is contained in my mind, always subject to change. Now I'm this, now I'm that, now I'm this, now I'm that. And once I get knowledge, the mind is thinking this, the mind is thinking that, there's this emotion, there's that emotion, that is taking place in me who am always invariably the same. That one who is invariably the same, who is in non-dual, not an object of the creation, is what we call the Paramatma. That Atma, which is not circumscribed by time, space, or any type of name, Namarupa. And that Paramatma we also call Brahman. So the Paramatma, that Atma, this self, is the Paramatma, the self in all beings, the very self of Ishvara, the very, what we call the Adhishtana of the entire creation. This word Adhishtana is going to become something very real for us, but just quickly what it means, I'll be unfolding it throughout. The Adhishtana is a word that we use in reference to Maya or Mithya. The Adhishtana is what is actually there when we have something which itself has no intrinsic reality superimposed upon something which is real. The thing which is real that is required for the superimposition to even be there is what we call the Adhishtana. What is not real in the sense of having a borrowed being but not an independent being, that is what we call mithya. That is a dependent reality. So anytime there's a dependent reality, for instance, if you superimpose experience a snake on a rope, the snake is mithya. It depends for its being totally upon the rope, which becomes the Adhishtana. If we use clay pot, these are two stock examples. If you use clay pot, the clay is the Adhishtana. You can't have the pot, the nama rupa pot, without the clay. If I take the clay from the pot, there's no pot. So what is the reality is, when there is a superimposition between two things? If one is a superimposition that has no independent being, then what is it is superimposed upon is called the Adhishtana. So here in our experience of this creation, in the end there is only one Adhishtana. Because there is only one thing, which itself is has independent being, independent existence. It's not something which depends upon something else for its being. Right? Any name and form depends upon something else for its being, its content, its substance. The only thing that doesn't depend upon anything for its being but is being itself is the non-objectifiable, me. If it's objectifiable, then there's subject-object relationship. I'm once again in time and space. But here, this me that I experience with this teaching, once the differentiation that viveka takes place, I recognize me, this one who I am, that I actually am, is the Adhishtana of all my experience. Because every experience, without exception, comes and goes. Comes into being, it goes out of being. every, no exception, except for me. And I'm not really an exception because I'm not within that same world of mitya, of time, of duality. I'm the adhishtana. Right? And that adhishtana, being outside of time and space, outside of anything within this projected reality, right, is a different order of reality, really. I'm a different order of reality. If you have an imagination of a world and you're walking through that world in your as a little character in the imagination, the imagination and the one you're identified with it, with in the imagination, has a different order of reality than you, right? So you become relatively, on one level, the adhishtana of your imagination. Actually, even in reference to the imagination, the one who is the adhishtana of the imagination is you, and you are free of the time, space, and vastu, namarupa, of the, everything in the imagination, including the whole imagination. If you have a dream, you are the adhishtana of the entire dream and all of the characters in it. Right? Because the dream itself comes and goes. It has its own internal reality, like the dream character is completely contained and held by the dream. But actually, you know, it's part and parcel of the dream. But everything in that dream world is continually changing within itself, and also comes into being and goes out of being, leaving you alone, your being. So everything revolves around your being. This being that is here right now, that I call me and think that me is really brought about by the existence of your body, mind, sense organs. That's what you think is an ajnani. The me, my me experience, the experience of who I am, is given to me by this body, mind, sense organs. That's the self-ignorance. That's the problem. Because that's just a horror story, actually. Everything about this body, mind, sense organs comes into being, goes out of being, it dies, it changes, it's moody, whatever. You know? But I'm not. And that's the viveka, that's the differentiation, that's what we have to discover. That's what we have to discover. The stability, that stability of my own being. And we can use the dream, we can use our imagination as what we call a drishtanta, as an illustration, to help us understand, you know, the relationship of the dream character within the dream to the self from whom the dream has come. In my imagination, the relationship of the characters to the whole imagination, and then the relationship of the imagination to me. These are wonderful illustrations to apply to my own experience of absolute adhishtanatvam, the state of being an adhishtana, you know, of being a different order of reality, really, of being what we call satyam. I am the satyam. We call it paramarthika satyam. Paramarthika satyam, what that means is my being is something that can never be negated in past, present, or future. That means I have no past, present, or future. I am the presence of the present. I am not subject to time. That is what we call reality. If reality is subject to time, there is, in a sense, no reality. Reality is the word satyam, because that means everything endlessly is coming into being and going out of being, so there is no real thing. There is no thing. We don't really call the Atma a thing. We don't give thingness to it because it has no time. It's not bound by time or space or by objectification. So there's no thingness to it. There's non-duality to it. It's one, I am one, non-dual, adhishtana. I am always present and pervasive, changelessly pervasive to every experience that exists in the universe. But my being needs to be recognized from the standpoint of this upadhi. Upadhi means this body, mind, sense organs. And then I have to recognize that this upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs, belongs actually to Maya, to the creation, to Ishwara. So here, what this verse says, the Paramatma, that self, the Atma, which is in fact free from time, space, and identification, Namarupa, is Advaya, non-dual. Advaya Ananda. It's not just non-dual. Ananda, Ananda means that, because we're not talking bliss here. Bliss is an experience that comes and goes. Because everybody thinks, you know, there's such shit on, and well, myself, it's really bliss. I don't know what that is, but I'm hoping to discover, because I'm not in bliss right now. And whatever bliss I have just comes and goes. This is Advaya Ananda. Okay? When we say Advaya, non-dual, the relationship between Satyam, or the Adhishtana, and Mithya is a non-dual relationship. Mithya, what is Maya, or what comes into being and goes out of being, has no being of its own. It's bordered by non-existence. It comes into being and goes out of being. It has no being. So myself plus something that has no being is not two. So this universe that has no independent being of its own depends upon me for its being, and so therefore it's one. Like, you can't say, well, there is the clay, and then of course we have the pot, as though there's two there. They're not two. The relationship between being, or between the clay and the pot, is a relationship of Satyam Mithya. Mithya means that which depends upon something for its being. So that's Advaita. That's a non-dual relationship, because the thing that seems to be a second has no being. To actually be a second, it's a different order of reality. Like, there's me and my imagination. My imagination is a wonderful capacity that I have. It's a fantastic capacity, but it's not a separate being. You know, it's what Swamiji will call, when he's not using Sanskrit, he'll call it as an incidental attribute. My imagination is an incidental attribute, right? Because it doesn't change me. If I have an imagination, then all of a sudden I become that imagination. That would be really weird. But it doesn't. It's a tool, and it's wonderful, and it's beautiful, but it's not something separate. So the Satya-Mithya relationship is what we mean by Advaya. And from its own, the Brahman, from its own standpoint, it's not subject to time, space, objectification, or nama-rupa. There is no second thing there. Just get rid of time and space. If nothing has free of time and space, then there's nothing to limit it in any way. It's not limited by time, by change, right? And it's not limited by space. So it's infinite, actually. That's the Padama, Padamatma. That Padamatma must be Advaya. It must be non-dual. Otherwise, we have to come up with some sort of a second thing. So now, that me, that invariable non-dual self, which is my being, is Ananda. Now, what does Ananda mean? This is the beautiful thing. I hope I can do it justice. This is our problem in samsara. I become unhappy. I become sad. I become angry. I become hurt. I become all of these things. All mithya, they come into being and go out of being. I'm identified with them. So I'm experiencing all of these things, which are not at all what I would want to be. The negative spectrum of experience, I would rather not have to experience. You know? If I'm experiencing them objectively, I can be interested in all of the mithya emotions. They're like salt and pepper, a little chili thrown in, you know? Interesting, Bhagavan's creation. But when I'm looking at myself through the lens of my moods and my emotions and my fears, then these are things that I would love to be free of. You know, let me work on myself. let me work on myself so I can just enjoy that state of kindness or love or a state that is not threatening to be. Why can't I just always be a good person? Why can't I just, you know, let everything be well with me? And then this is impeding on it, and this is impeding on it. And I just want to be myself. Okay? The Parama Ananda is always myself. It is always who I want to be. The Atma, the self, not viewed from the lens of time and space and all of the emotions and moods and everything, but as though mitya, as though impede on me, I take myself to be those. I'm identified with those experiences, and then I become who I don't want to be. The Atma, the self, is who you do want to be, who you always want to be, who you want to be. You don't care even about the positive spectrum of emotions, let alone the negative spectrum. I'd like to get rid of those. Let me just have the positive positive emotions. You know what? I don't even want those. I don't want any of it. I don't care. Let them be what they are. I just want to be me. I just love to be me. That is what we mean by ananda. It's not a bliss experience. A bliss experience is on a continuum. It's an experience that comes and goes. A happy experience, a loving experience. They're beautiful, they're wonderful. They come and go. They belong to samsara. The positive things that, and we say these are the positive spectrum because they resonate with my nature. They're vrittis, they're thought modifications that resonate beautifully with my nature. So we love them, you know, but they go. We don't love that they go, you know, and we don't care at all or want the negative ones. And we don't want the positive ones to go, which they always go. This is samsara. Like in the beautiful text in the Bhashas, they'll say, Shankara will say, you know, this is how everybody feels. Let me be happy. Let me not suffer. There it is. Mm-hmm. Let me be happy. Let me not suffer. And then a mumuksha will say, yeah, but that can't happen here. Yeah. I will be temporarily happy, and I will also suffer. Could I just be happy? You know what you're really saying? It's not let me have a momentary bliss experience or a loving experience or a compassion experience. You say, let me just be me. If I could just be me, and then let these experiences come and go, that's fine, it doesn't matter. But let me be free. Let me be the Parama Advaya Ananda. And the wonderful thing is that is exactly who I am. But because of self-ignorance, we have a problem. The problem is a problem born of ignorance where I'm totally identified with my mind and my unconscious with all kinds of things. And I view myself through that lens rather than letting all of those experiences take place in the sanctuary, really, of my being. And I can say sanctuary of my being because Viveka is there, right? And so actually in my own nature, I am, without words, without duality, without any emotion, I am the ultimate inner friend. And to recognize, to identify this Atma, myself, as that changeless Paramatma, that changeless inner friend that is really the ultimate sanctuary of all experience. That's what I have to recognize. And I can recognize that through Viveka, through that discrimination that this all these texts are guiding us toward. So he says, Paramatma Advaya Ananda Purnaha. Purnaha, like Purnamada, Purnamidam, we chant this all the time, so in Ukra. Purnaha comes from the root tre, long re. It means to fill. So Purnaha is a past passive participle, actually. It means Purnaha means that which is filled. Some of you use the example of imagine a glass of water, and you fill the glass of water to the top. And then you keep adding drops, you know, and it actually gets a little mound on the top of it. Mm-hmm. But it's full when it cannot take one more drop. That's Purnaha. It is completely full. It means infinite. Your Atman, the self, is Purnaha. It is infinite. It is non-dual. There is not room for anything else. Right? If we could, well, it's infinite, and then let's add a little thing, another drop onto it. No. No, there's no room for another drop. Right? It is absolutely whole and complete, non-dual, free of time and space. Once you recognize time and space as belonging to Maya, as belonging to the creation, then yourself isn't circumscribed in any way. There's nothing but being. It's not big. It's not small. It's not red. It's not yellow. It's not tall. It's not short. It is non-dual. And we'll see, and as we do these meditations, even right now, at this moment, if you just gently focus on your own presence, you are there, but you're not a size. These words just fall off. They don't mean anything. They have no meaning at all. It's not that, oh, I don't have a size, I don't exist. No, you just don't have a size. You are, but you're not big or small or tall or short or red or yellow or black or brown or what. And you try to apply when you're doing a contemplation, you say, well, how tall am I? Word falls off. It doesn't apply. So you are Purnaha. Your being is infinite in its non-duality. Infinite means one without a second. Advaya, the word advaya. Dvaya means two. Advaya means not two. One without a second. Non-dual is Purnaha. In the Sanskrit version. So we have Paramatma Advaya Ananda Purnaha Purvam, before the creation. Okay? In the commentary it says Purvam Shrishtehe Prak. Purvam means Shrishtehe Prak, before the Shrishti. Shrishti means creation, before the creation. I was, I can say, the Paramatma, Advayananda Purnaha. Prak Shrishtehe Prak, before the creation. Then what? Swamayaya. By my own Maya. Swa means one's own. So by one's own Maya, the Maya of the Paramatma, that Maya, by one's own Maya. Swayam eva jagat bhutva. By means of my own Maya, Svayam Eva Jagat Bhutva, having myself, Svayam Eva, having myself alone become this creation, Jagat. Having myself, not only myself having become this creation, by means of my own Maya, Svamayaya, by means of my own Swa, Maya, by means of my own Maya, instrumental, singular, so by means of, through, by, as an instrument, by means of my own Maya, having myself become this Jagat. Jagat means that not everything that exists within time and space, the entire creation, having become this entire creation, then, pravisha jivarupata, jivarupataha, so first, I became this entire creation, and having become this entire creation, I entered it in the form of all of the jivas, as though. Okay? I entered this creation in the form of all of the jivas. Now, that doesn't mean that, okay, now we have the creation and Bhagavan thinks, okay, let me just kind of fly in there. Let's fly in. We'll send a bunch of jivas in there. That's not what's meant here. Okay. So let's just look at this. Of course, I could spend the entire camp on this verse. But we won't do that. But they'll break this down. I just want to tell you that this, I can't spend the whole camp on the verse. We're going to have to know that. You have to know that each one of these verses is going to expand it more and more and more. Okay, but so I have to say things that normally I would spend so much time on, but we have to remember that this is the introductory verse, and the introductory verse of at least with Vidyaranya often, is what the rest of the chapter unfolds. Okay, that's why this verse is so amazing. is this verse needs to be unpacked, and he will unpack it through the rest of the chapter. In the seventh, his seventh chapter, which we often teach, it is actually around 350 verses. And the whole 350 verses is an exposition again on the first verse, which is a verse from, I think, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, I believe. It's an unpacking of that verse. So this, the rest of this is an unpacking of this. So, but let's just work a little bit on it. So, purvam sumayaya swayameva jagat bhutva jivavat pravishat. Pravishat means entered. He entered, having become the whole creation, he entered jiva rupataha. He entered from the standpoint, really, having become in the form of all of the jivas. So that's what the verse is. So let me unfold that. Before I have an imagination, right, before the imagination, I am free of the imagination. Right? If you have an imagination before the imagination, you're free of it. You're not having the imagination. So, you are there without the imagination. Okay. Before you have an imagination, you're free of the imagination. But, you have the capacity to have that imagination. Right? But, you have the capacity there within you to have the imagination, but that capacity is an incidental attribute of you. It's an incident, it's what we call mithya. It's an incidental attribute. It's a wonderful, incredible capacity that we have. But it is not you, it's not changing you. If you have an imagination, you're still you before, during, and after the imagination, so that when the imagination, when you retrieve, pull back the imagination, you're still there. There before the imagination, during the imagination, and after the imagination, you, just as you were. Not that you can't learn from your imagination, but that's all kind of within the upadi, you know, within the body-mind-sense organs, you can learn and all of that. Now I'm just talking about you and the imagination. So the imagination is an incidental attribute of you that is even there, available to you when you're not using it. It's a capacity that you have. That capacity is what we call maya. What is, when we say maya, from your standpoint as a jiva, you have, you know, in what we call alpa, you have a little bit of what Ishvara has, and infinite is infinite for you, because you exist within this creation. Everything that the creation is made of, all of the capacities also of the creation, you have in small form. Like we would say Ishvara, as we see what Ishvara is in a minute, Ishvara, we would say, is sarvajna. He has all knowledge, infinite knowledge, where you have alpajna. Alpa means limited knowledge. So Ishvara has sarva shaktiman, all capacity, all powers that exist in the creation are Ishvara's. You have alpa shaktiman. You have limited. Ishvara has the infinite expression of maya in the form of this manifestation of this creation. So he has maya under his control, in his hands, the entire maya. But you have, as a jiva, you have a little bit of that. You get to, in a positive way, you get to dream maya. You get to have imagination maya. All those are kind of positive things once you have a nightmare. But, yeah. But it's a very extraordinary capacity. But, you know, everything has its shadow side. You can also project. So I'm a real joke. Somebody raised their eyebrow, and your mind goes, why did they do that? They don't like me. They didn't like what I just said. They're critical of me. Whatever insecurities you have inside, boom, they land on the eyebrow. Because maybe your critical mother or your critical father used to raise the eyebrow in that way. You know, and so this poor innocent person who doesn't know you or anybody in the room, that has no idea. Her poor little eyebrow goes up. And then thousands of projections land on the eyebrow. In fact, if we were... And what I'm saying, that projection is real to us until we withdraw it, right? So projection is a very, very powerful thing. Imagine they have the capacity to actually experience a snake on a rope. We have that capacity and to respond to it emotionally. That's all this incredible capacity of projection. But my being actually is free of that projection. It's free of Maya, and that's why Swamiji calls Maya an incidental attribute. It's there for me, but it does not change my being. So we can understand that if I have an imagination, I can withdraw the imagination. I, as I was, were there before, during, and after the nature of myself. And so, now, if I can say that you, because you're like many little limited Ishwaras, you are the Ishwara of your imagination. Okay? You're the Ishwara of your imagination. Now, when you imagine, say you're having a conscious daydream almost, or a conscious, a lucid dream, we could say, you are the Ishwara of your lucid dream, or of your imagination, doesn't matter. You're the Ishwara of that, because that Maya comes from you. Now the imagination has come, right? And included in the imagination that has come are many individual jivas, individual beings in the form of any conscious beings, even plants or jivas. You know, they have a subtle body. They have sense organs. They have a mind that is appropriate to the particular form that they are in. Animals, worms, they all have minds and sense organs and capacities that are appropriate to the form that they're in. Okay. Now here Bhagavan said, in the verse, you say, I, the Paramatma, having projected this imagination, myself, having the imagination being projected from me, sustained by me, resolved into me, when this imagination comes, I then, having created the imagination, not as an act, but just as a manifestation, I then enter all of those beings. Do I enter them? No, I'm not entering them. It's because the stuff of the imagination has what we call subtle bodies, sukshma shariras, well, subtle bodies, we'll get into that later, all of which have sattva, which reflects consciousness. And because those minds are there, those sense organs are there, the very material that they're made of allows for the reflection of consciousness, and so they look around and they take themselves to be conscious beings, right? Because there's a capacity from the standpoint of the upadhi, the conditioning adjunct, you know, for that manifestation of consciousness. And so in that way, I enter the creation as little jivas who are running around as little conscious beings. But the consciousness that they're enjoying is really the me. It's really not running around at all. I'm not running around, but it's like if you go into a fun house, you know, one of those where it has 1,000 mirrors, and you look the way the mirrors are arranged, you see all of a sudden you become 1,000 little yous, right? But actually, those 1,000 little reflections in the fun house, there you are, there you are, there you are, there you are. But where is the self-experience? Right here. Only here. Now, have the imagination with all the little creatures that are there. Where is their self-experience? They're all running around as me, 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 me. But where is the self-experience? Really? It's only with me. I am the self-experience. We're all these jivas running around. We're all little mirrors. As though. And each one is saying, I am, I am, I am. I'm the conscious being. I'm the conscious being. I'm the conscious being. But the conscious being, right, which pervades the whole Maya Upadhi, or the whole Maya, Upadhi means the conditioning agent in the form of the whole creation, right? That whole thing The whole thing reflects consciousness as Ishvara, but what is the Ishvara's experience of consciousness? He is only me. There's only one conscious being. It's the Purna, that's the Paramatma. That is the consciousness experience. Not as an objectifiable experience, but as its own swarupa, its own nature. So everything in the creation that has a subtle body has that extraordinary capacity to identify itself with me. Like, for instance, if I hold a mirror, nice clean mirror, and a rock up to the sun. These are both Maya, I mean, they're just both material, right? You've got the material mirror and the material rock. But there's a difference. One has a little sukshma sharira. The mirror is like a sukshma sharira, like a subtle body. And the rock is just material. They're both just matter. But this mirror's got something going for it. It gets to have the sun as though abiding in it. And so the material identifies, really, with the sun. From the standpoint of the sun, I'm just the sun. From the standpoint of the mirror, or from the standpoint of the mirror takes the upadhi to be the sun. But now, where does the sun experience, where is that taking place? Only in the sun. The drishtanta is not absolutely perfect, but anyway, no drishtanta is perfect, but anyway, you can get the point. To kind of counteract that, to make this drishtanta work a little bit better, if I hold up a mirror to my face, the self-experience is not taking place in the mirror. It's me. It's taking place here as me, the conscious being. The conscious being isn't, like if I say, oh, now there's two of us. Right, now there's two of us. Now I see this little mirror figure saying, now there's two of us. Right? There's not two self-experiences here. There's only one self-experience. Yeah. We're all like these upadis, the minds, body, sense organs, are all like, in a sense, like little mirrors of the one fun, the one me in the funhouse. There's only one me experience. So the me experience right now of yourself is myself. There are two of us. There's only one me. And the me experience belongs to me, to the Atma. Not to the Maya Upadhi. It belongs to the self. There's also it's true that the me experience that you're having is you. You could, well, I don't want my me experience to belong to somebody else. I don't, you know, I want my, this is my experience. It's not a big universal me. I don't want a universal me. I've heard this many times. I don't want a universal me. I want me. I want to be me. But there is only one me experience, and that is you. There is only one. There is only one me experience. It's just every one of these upadis, right, takes itself to be the cause of that one me experience. But when your body drops, it'll be like, if the prarabdha is out or whatever, it'll be like Steve Jobs. When he died, you know, he had his family around him, and he was just leaving his body. He was just going, and you know what he did? He was leaving. And he goes, oh, wow. That's he departed on that. Wow. Because when it's happening, this is going, but nothing's happening to you. And there's no limitations being experienced at that time. You're freed from the samsara for that moment. Of course, you enter back in, whether you're getting into the body and reincarnated and all of that. But you realize for the moment that absolute ananda of just you, and nothing is happening to you. You are free of these upadis. You are not these upadis at all. So you're not sharing your me experience. You are the me experience. There is nothing. There is no other me experience. You are that. You just have to recognize that, in fact, if you're not limited to any given body, mind, sense organs, you are the me experience of the entire creation. The entire creation comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. But then this creation, as we'll see as we get more into Maya, when this Maya comes, it includes all of the jivas who have been reincarnated beginninglessly, and each one is only a jiva because of ignorance. Because you take yourself to be this body, mind's sense organs, that ignorance is what causes you to become limited without ever becoming limited. So I have as though entered in the form of all of these jivas, because everyone's saying, I am, I am, I am, I am, that I am is me. So of course I've entered into all of them without doing a thing. If everyone says, I am, even the little animals, they often, I am, I am, again, I am, without the words. So I've become all of these from their standpoint. Not from my standpoint, from the standpoint of just the Atma, but from the standpoint of all of the jivas, I am there. Like there's an infinite number of little mirrors. And from the standpoint of Ishvara, the whole Maya Upadhi, which is pervaded by Sattva, if you don't know these terms, we'll get to them later, that element of Maya that reflects consciousness. Bhagavan, the whole creation, enjoys conscious being, meanness. That's why we call the whole creation as Ishvara, as the Lord. Not because the Lord is an overarching looking at you and looking at you and looking at you, but it's infinite conscious being. Swamiji calls this manifestation of consciousness, of Maya, as a manifestation of infinite knowledge. You have limited knowledge. Like if I ask you right now to think of a pine tree, or if you know what a pine tree, think of a beautiful bird, immediately as I say it'll come. Because that knowledge is there. Whatever knowledge that is, whatever bird knowledge you have, I say, think of a beautiful bird, your unconscious will, timeless. But it's there. But it's limited. For Ishvara, it's limitless. So the creation is the manifestation of limitless knowledge. Why does he say that? Because when you have a manifestation of knowledge, it is conscious. It is known. It exists and it is known. The manifestation of knowledge from the unmanifest to the manifest is a manifestation of what is known, right? So imagine the whole creation being a manifestation of knowledge. It is known. For Ishvara, that's Sarvajnaha, limitless knowledge. So that limitless knowledge of Ishvara in the unmanifest condition comes into manifestation and it is known. Just like if I ask you, you know, to think of a beautiful bird, boom, comes into manifestation, it is known. When it's in unmanifest condition, it just abides there. Okay. And so Bhagavan is saying now, I enter this creation in the form of all of the jivas, because they're all owning me. Properly too, the adyasa, the superimposition, is ignorance. But the experience of me, when I say I am only referring to myself, to the Atma, the Paramatma. That's what I'm referring to. And then I add all this baggage on. I say, I am really in heaven. Okay? I am is perfect. You know? The I am, whatever comes after that, if it's not Brahman, is Maya. Mm-hmm. So we have this incredible superimposition, right? Incredible superimposition. And it's all real from the standpoint of Maya. Yeah. It's not from the standpoint of the self. I simply am. There's no problem at all. There's moksha. Moksha is only a term that we use from the standpoint of ajnanam. Once that ignorance is removed, what I recognize is I am liberated. I've always been liberated. There's never been a problem, ever, at any time, and there never can be a problem. All is well. I am a liberated being, timelessly. But the self doesn't need liberation. The self is fine. It's this. Body, mind, sense organs, from this standpoint, there's some limitation. And so Bhagavan, Ishvara, says, yeah, I've entered as the creation, I've entered, and then he thinks, boy, did that create a problem. I've got to go in and fix this. For those who have recognized what a huge problem they find themselves in, at some point, you recognize it, there has to be a solution to it. And since there's a solution, then you go, oh, okay. Okay, this has been a fun game and we can get out of it. It's fine. Okay. Been really challenging game, but there's an end to it. There's a, yeah. them. Thank goodness.
Oh my God.
Let's do our.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.